Unleash the sun. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. And with me today is, I think, one of the most interesting stories to have for a guest thus far on the show. Patty Crouch is here with us. Did I say the last name right?
You did.
I nailed it. Come on now.
Kind of hard to mess up, but okay.
Patty, you and I met, was he your husband then?
No, were you guys fiancé.
Fiancé then. Now, this is almost 10 years ago.
Yep.
And I want to say this is at like a bar in Pasadena. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, it was Viva, and now it's 50/50 Slater's, which has good burgers. That's the place it was.
I had no idea. So since going, so let me bring the listeners up. So back in the day, who's been a guest on the show, Darren Carter, the party starter, I was an opening act for him. I opened up for him all over the road. And when you open for Darren Carter, the party starter, what ends up happening is you do these weird one-nighter gigs around L.A. because when he's in town, he likes to go up like most comics do. And so we went, and this is when I was just starting out in stand-up, and so we're doing some, one of the things we did was like a Mexican food place in Los Banos, California, and we do all these weird, weird things, and but one was this nice kind of like, it felt like a bar or club,
yeah.
Right? And the weird thing about it is, so I did that show there, and that's where I met you and your then fiancé, now husband, and I... I've been to 50/50 since then, not knowing that they were the same place because that was the one and only time. But I do remember talking to you and your husband after the show because you guys were planning on getting married. I think that was pretty much all of my material was about being married, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was the majority with you and your wife.
Yes. And it was, here, get a little closer to that just so you can move that anywhere you want. But I just want to make sure everybody can hear you. All right. And so you guys came up and we chatted after the show because you guys were getting married, and I borderline ruined the concept. I feel like is a strong chance of something I did. Is that an accurate representation or no?
No, judging we were too in love then to see anything.
What about now? Are you guys still? Don't hesitate. He's in the room.
I know. Actually, we are. I mean, I'm better now than I was then. So like if.
Better at the marriage thing is what you're saying.
The marriage thing in person, like
really?
In general, like who I was then was this like very low self-esteem, manipulative little person. And now I'm like, oh, I'm a good person. And I'm like who I am and I've gotten better. So we'll see.
That's interesting. I've never had anybody look back at themselves as being like, consider it like, what do you think? I'm telling you, this is going off the what we plan to talk about already, but what do you think in your mind made you feel like you were manipulative? Like,
the woman trap's all over the place. Like, expecting, we have this thing, the woman trap, where you like ask a question and you want an answer and they get the wrong answer and you're like, oh, it's a woman trap.
Like the stereotypical one, do these pants make me look fat?
Yeah.
That is a stereotypical one, but I would imagine yours wouldn't be so stereotypical. You're saying you were just good at. Oh, now this, I have so many questions now, Patty.
Go for it.
So the woman trap, like, so did you know that they were happening? Were they on purpose? And if so, what are you trying to catch a man to do?
I don't know.
I feel like so many women are listening to the show. Like remember the guy
like,
who...
Don't tell our secret.
Yeah, exactly. Like, like the guy who ruined all the magician's tricks. Like,
basically going to do the same thing.
I have a friend who I do another podcast with, and she calls, I think, this same concept chick-fu, where you use, not necessarily, it's not your sexual feminine wiles, to use quotes, but it's that you just use your feminine energy, but not necessarily in a sexual way, right?
Right.
And to manipulate guys into doing what it is that you want them to do. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Basically. And then to say what you want to hear and to do what you want to do.
Because see, to me as a married guy, that just sounds like training a husband. That's really, it doesn't sound so manipulative. It's just like, because I feel like much like, and we'll get into the kid stuff, but I feel like much like when you have kids, everybody's jokes about how they wish there was a manual. And one of my favorite jokes, it hasn't even aired yet, although it might have by the time you're listening to this, is that the Roseanne show is coming back. And the John Goodman says in the commercial I saw, he goes, well, you know, there's no book for raising kids. And then Darlene says, actually, there's like tens of thousands.
There's millions.
Yeah, exactly. Which is such a, to me, it's a funny concept. But there is no, in your mind, there is no training manual of how to be a husband, right? To be a good husband. So I would think that maybe I'm letting you off the hook a little bit. But I would think you're more just kind of trying to train your husband into speaking your love language.
Well, I feel like at some point you need to stop thinking about yourself and start thinking about them.
Mm.
And so back then it was I was just so selfish. And so like, so all the, it was all about me, like what I wanted and what I needed. And now it's like, no, like he should be free to do.
How old were you guys when you were engaged? Can I ask?
Oh my God, I'm bad at math.
Well, like early 20s?
Yeah, early 20s.
Early 20s. So the same as my wife. We were married at 21.
We were married in 2008, and we were engaged in 2007. So I was 20. Chris, how old was I? I was 28.
28.
Well, I lie about my age, too, so I have really no clue how old I am. So I don't really.
That's awesome.
And I don't lie that. I don't lie younger. I lie older, so it really messes my head sometimes.
Well, I did. And be careful, because I was bit by that one time. I was working with a bunch of younger people on a Nickelodeon family cruise, and they were trying to figure out. I kept getting to play the role, because I have gray hair, right? So, like, I kept playing the role of Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon, like, I'm too old for this shit kind of thing, you know? And so I kept doing that and saying that. And then they go, well, how old are you exactly? And I said, well, how old do you think I am? And at the time, I was in my early 30s. And they were like, I would guess 35 or 38. And so part of the joke is I said, I would have been 35. I will turn 35. And I picked something like 5 years earlier, basically telling them I was 40. And it hurts a little when you go, they look at you, go, I could see that.
True.
That makes sense.
It's happened a couple of times, and I'm like, oh, okay, work out more.
All right, before I fall into any other rabbit holes, first let's find out. So you are now married. So you got married, you said, in 2008, so 10 years of marriage. And how many kids do you have?
We have three kids.
Three kids.
Twins that are seven in first grade, and a special needs son that's three and a half.
Three and a half. Mm-hmm. And these are all adopted kids?
Yes, we adopted through the foster care system, and you can't see me, obviously, but yeah. I am a white Mexican.
Yes.
And my kids are black.
And you're okay. And it was when I got so many questions before we get into that. So now we have your stats, but then we'll talk about this. But I always do this with new guests. And this is kind of my way of, I wanted to abbreviate everybody's opportunity to kind of get to know you as a person. So we'll go through these real quick questions. You can name just one if you want, but do you have a, like most married couples have a celebrity hall pass list? Are you familiar?
Yes.
Do you have
Mark Wahlberg?
Mark Wahlberg. Done. Nailed it.
No hesitation.
No hesitation whatsoever. So Daddy's Home 2, even the sequel. Were you on board then?
I haven't gotten to see it.
Oh, not yet, but you're on board.
I'm on board. We had Mark Wahlberg week where I see them all. We see Date Night. We see them all.
Oh, it's so funny because I feel like my wife is the only person who is excited to see Daddy's Home 2, but evidently, no. It's you and her, evidently.
Anything with Mark Wahlberg. Even if he has a cameo, I'm like, I'm in.
I mean, I think we just found a transformer. If you could have any job out there, what job would you like to have?
I would like to be a trust fund baby.
A trust fund baby. That's an interesting. Would you like to?
I've always been thinking about this because you asked a lot of your guests. I'm like, what would I want to do? And I think I'm too logical when I think about it. Because I'm like, oh, like a marriage family therapist, help other families with the trauma because that's what we know. And then I'm like, oh, I had to go to school for that. And then I'm like, I'd have to go to school for that. Like everything ends up me having to go to school.
Burn calories in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and work in the end. So I'd rather just not have the money to travel the way I want to travel, do what I want to do, and just kind of,
That's a good point by you. Like, if you're going to pick the job and it's going to be there. Now, would you like to then be able to regress, like, age-wise? Would you want to start? Would you like to, all of a sudden, somebody comes to you tomorrow and says, Patty Crouch, guess what? We made a big mistake. Evidently, you've had this trust fund this entire time. Now you're a bajillionaire, right? Like enough money where you could start an Instagram account and just go travel the world and do crazy things, right?
Yeah.
Or would you like for it to be from when you were younger?
Oh, just now.
Just now is fine?
Well,
because then you got to go back.
All these stipulations, like, okay, do I have to be that person again? Because I'd rather be like,
you want to be who you are now.
Now, but maybe not with all the responsibilities. Like, I wouldn't want to necessarily travel the world with my three kids because that would be a lot of work.
Right.
Kind of thing. So, like, would it, you know, like, but I don't like who I was back. Like, you know, I want that, like, the wisdom that I've actually gotten by living.
It's the frustrating
life.
Part about age, right? It's that you, as you get older, you gain experience and wisdom naturally. And so, but you become tired and weighed down with other obligations and responsibilities where right. you don't really have the freedom. Like, you couldn't truly enjoy having a trust fund at 16. Like, it's, you think you could. No. But you could not unless you were at some point in your life 42 with a few kids and a mortgage, right? And then you get to go back and be 16 again, at, you know what I mean? With that same, then that's but a perfect
the same,
scenario.
The same brain, yes. Being able to know.
Right.
Like, but it's not just.
And that's why I love shows like Black Mirror, where it's all about how you can upload your consciousness to the cloud and live forever. all right. So what do you want most for your kids?
Honestly, mm-hmm. this sounds like the biggest cliche, but because we're a black and white family, I would really want them to just be accepted by everyone. Because one of my biggest fears is that they're going to be too white for the black community, but too black for the white community.
Oh.
So they've been raised by white people.
Right.
You know? And so really having that, like, it doesn't matter who you are, the character of your, what is it that Martin Luther King said? It doesn't. Not the color of your skin, but the content of your character.
Yeah.
Like that really, really be true. I mean, I don't, does that make sense?
That, like, makes absolute sense.
I mean, that's very, sorry for the deepness, but.
No, I mean, I love it because it's not something that I think when you think of somebody, I think when we think of somebody who adopts a, I keep calling this an interracial baby. Like, I don't even know if that's the right term. Am I using?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean.
And if we had it, it would change in like a week, so we'd be wrong.
But our most, I think our, weirdly enough, for someone in my mindset is that the closest connection we have is Angelina Jolie, right? Like, I think that's what it always goes to. And we always like to make the joke of, like, oh, well, she's rescuing these children from these impoverished nations and everything, which I don't know if that's necessarily what you guys did. But I just from the few minutes we've been chatting, I don't think it's necessarily what you feel about that. And that it's interesting because I don't think that's part of the thought process. It's not part of the thought process to think, well, I don't want to necessarily, how do I instill in you the culture that you come from, but still making you a part of this family? Like, how do I do that?
Completely. And taking what, like, this isn't a sound, I don't know how to word this either, but not making them a victim of it either.
Right.
Like, making them powerful to be, like, being very powerful black females and confident in their body in this world.
Right.
In all of that.
Right.
Which is, I mean.
And I think, I don't know. I can't get on a soapbox, but I imagine that if you have a family, right? I think that we're all kind of working towards a family of kind of love. Like, as long as you have that family unit. I recently have been looking into research on, like, you know, predictors of things. And I do a segment on a talk station here once a week about parenting. And one of the things that they're showing more and more that is a predictor for, quote unquote, happiness, success, whatever it is you want to call it, right, is whether or not mom and dad stay together. And so it's regardless of socioeconomics, of none of that matters. What is a greater predictor is whether or not mom can stay together. Now, here's the thing. If you're listening to this and you're a single mom, you're like, well, fuck, right? But all I'm saying is, I'm not saying that if you're a single mom, here's the thing, newsflash, it's difficult. It's more difficult for you. Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. So, but my point is that, how to say
it
this?
It ends up being about relationships.
Right.
And that's right. The key thing is, like, what kind of relationship do you, and not necessarily, like, what kind of relationship do you have with your family and your parents and your siblings and, like, that in itself? Do you feel loved? Do you feel cherished? Do you
right.
feel important, unique, you know, any other great adjective you can say.
but I think that's your point, is that what ends up happening is that I think it becomes a forest through the trees situation where it's like if you're so focused on income, right, and mm-hmm. setting your kids up to have the most well-rounded extracurricular situation or whatever you know, but in reality, is that just the fact that you have a strong family unit that you came from and therefore have a good model for you to build one? Or maybe your family unit was not so strong. And this is where I bring back the single moms and single dads into this, is that if you're coming out of a situation that was not so strong, you have now gained the perspective of knowing how to do things differently and how important it is. I really feel like in that analogy that a single parent gets an unfair shake because they're even more hyper focused than someone like me who's been with their high school sweetheart. You know what I mean? Like I'm lazy to that dynamic and it can easily slip away from me. But the last thing I want to get into and then is before we move on here, because it's one of the questions that I think it's such a fun topic, is what was the last argument that you had with your spouse?
Well, it was all my fault too. So
I don't, here's the thing. I don't know how often this happens, but I just got to tell you, there's a strong chance that you may or you're either going to be making a lot of dads listening to this jealous. Like I imagine them playing the audio of like, listen to her say how it's all her fault. You hear her?
See, they can admit it too.
Women can admit they're wrong. I've seen it.
Completely.
She's not the unicorn.
Well, so we have a dog that we're training to be a service dog, and my husband was taking the girls on a walk to train the dog around the block or whatever. And previously, I've been sick this last week, mm-hmm. So that's my defense. I've been sick, so my brain is kind of not there all the time. And I guess I had said, like, do you need me to wake up from my nap so that I can watch Fat Boy Jackson, our son? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, go ahead and sleep or whatever. So then right before he leaves, he's like, wake up, watch Jackson. And I was like, okay. And then he just tantrumed the whole time because all he wanted to do was be with the dog and his sisters and the family. And mm-hmm. I was home. So I ended up spending like 30 minutes with no patience trying to calm down this child meltdown the whole time. So then he comes in and I'm like, don't ever do that to me again. Like, that was the worst. All he wanted was you. And I don't have this headspace for this. I don't have the patience for this. It was horrendous. Don't do that again. And he just goes, okay. Like, not even going to like entertain this.
It's like, all right, fair enough.
And then like 3 minutes later, I was like, Chris, like, do you get my point? Trying to say, like, I was trying to be right. So I was like, do you get my point? And he was just like, but you said, and I was like, damn it. Like, I did say that. All right. So now I have no space to be mad at all because I totally told you you could do that. So
that's funny. All right. That's funny. It is funny. This is what I like and why I asked the question is I just like how marriage seems to bring about this idea where you can have the tiniest little spat the smallest little detail, but it also seems to hold up a little bit of a magnifying glass to like a bigger picture. Is that, you know what I mean? Like that seems to be every marital fight that I hear about. There seems to be some kind of, I don't know, making a mountain out of an anthill or whatever. But all right. So now let's see how much time we're good. Now I want to get into what it was if you're, and we haven't pre-planned this interview in any way, shape or form, but I'm fascinated by your family. So please feel free to say, you know, that's not something I can go into. But how is it that you and Chris decide we are going to adopt kids? Like what was the genesis of that idea?
Well, okay. We always both wanted to adopt before we even met each other. So that was good. There was no like convincing my husband to adopt or whatever.
So you both came together saying we are not going to make people for this world. We are going to take people that don't have homes.
The grand plan was to have two biological kids and adopt a third. Mm. Like that was the grand plan. And then I realized my uterus doesn't work. So, you know, kind of a bummer there. So then we ended up adopting through foster care. We chose foster care mainly because the church we were in part of really had like a strong foster community and just there's kids right here that need you. Like there's no, and for us, there was no need to go abroad to find our family. There were people right here. So our kids are from Compton.
And so when it works out, like, and forgive my ignorance to this whole thing, but so when it works out to where you end up, so you say, I'm going to adopt kids, because we've had friends who have done this as well, and it was a really emotional roller coaster for them. Where they, unfortunately, like, the situation of these two kids, they were also siblings, they were slightly older, mm-hmm. They move in with them, mm-hmm. and they're going through the process of adopting them, and then somehow during that process, their mom is released from jail and wants her kids back.
Oh, yeah.
And so then that essentially she has these kids ripped away from her. And then so she's like, oh, and to deal with that is such a weird thing. Right. They had also been trying for a while to have kids of their own. And so now they have the kids and then now the kids are going away and then they bring them these two other kids. Right. And so those boys ended up staying with them. But then within 6 months, of the other kids arriving, they get a call from social services saying, hey, things didn't work out with mom again. I don't know if you'd like to adopt these two as well. And they tried, but unfortunately, like, it would just be too many kids.
Yeah, at some point you can't say them all.
Right, exactly. You know? And it's its own level of heartbreak, right, that you you got to wrestle with and do that. So did you guys, does it work out where it's like, okay, we're going to adopt the babies and these just happen to be black? Or did you want African-American kids or?
Well, we got, so the whole process is kind of crazy because you kind of get a fostering, you get to fill out a profile of like what kind of kids you're willing to accept.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do age, you know, ethnicities, genders. So our profile was 4 and under, any ethnicity, any gender. And we actually said no to fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which is kind of funny because that's the kid that we have.
Oh,
now.
Really?
But
what is that? I don't even know what that is.
So fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is basically when mom drinks during pregnancy and causes brain damage. So our youngest son has severe brain damage.
He's a victim of that. Is that the right way to say it? Or
I don't even know.
Yeah.
It just sucks.
Yeah.
Look at this sucks. He's going to have a, I don't want to say he's going to have a tough, hard life, but his life's not going to be neurotypical and easy and given to him kind of thing. But so anyway, so you get these. So then your agents, we went through an FFA, like a private agency. And they call you up because the county calls them saying, hey, we have 2 African-American girls that are 9 months old. Do you have a family for them? And so then they go through their list and like, oh, the Crouches fit this profile. So then you get a call of saying, hey, there's these 2 9-month-old twins. Do you want them? And then we were like, okay, which is kind of crazy because we're like, we've never been parents before. You're going to give us 2? They think about this?
I feel like that's how everybody who has twins feels like, right? They just jump right into 2.
So they get 9 months. So we got a call at 11. 11 o'clock.
You got to start at a sprint.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And how long between when you get that call and then the kids arrive?
So we got the call at 11 and we were on the 405 and I picked them up at 3 o'clock. So like literally you have like we had four hours. We called people so they could bring extras by the time. So law, they have to have a place to stay and be able to drive home safe. So we had to get a car seat and we had to.
So you had to have
crib and like all the stuff. Resources.
But when you fill out the adoption profile, because you've got, unless you're saying I want a baby, right?
Right.
You can't really establish a nursery. You can have rooms that are ready and available or a room ready and available with some things, but you can't get too specific, right?
Correct.
And so in this case, you had to get a crib and car seats and everything all within 4 hours.
Yep.
And what happens if you're like, I just need 24 hours? Then do they go,
pass, next person.
Really?
I mean, they need to place these kids.
I get it.
Home.
I totally get it.
They get calls and calls. Like, LA is saturated with kids needing homes. Like, foster care is not for the faint of heart, but if you're thinking about it, like, look into it because it's like these kids need homes and loving homes to build relationships so that they can create this world that I need for my kids. People, come on.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because you hear such a big movement for, and forgive my analogy and any ignorance associated with it, but I feel like you see so many ads and Sarah McLachlan got a song about spay and neutering your pet, right? But I recently, there's a little girl who's in my younger son's class and she said, I started a business. I make cupcakes and I donate the proceeds to orphanages. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I love it. I love it. So I gave her, I said, how much are the cupcakes? She goes, well, usually people pay what they want. I'm like, I love it again, man. This kid's a good negotiator. She's 6 years old.
She's going to be the billionaire.
Yes, exactly. So I ended up buying 4 cupcakes for $10. And then she said, well, I don't think I got the other $5. So I think I paid $15 for them, which is fine. I totally don't care. But the part that came out of it for me was that the people that I told that story as kind of a funny anecdote were all saying, like, are there even orphanages anymore? Like, are they a thing? And here's the thing. I don't know that they're orphanages. I know that we probably lean more on foster families who kind of house the orphans until they can be placed with a permanent home. Right.
And we call them something different.
Like, group homes as opposed to an orphanage.
Yeah.
But see, but isn't that sad? Like the level, the horrible publicity. You have these kids that really could use a home more than you. They need it, right?
Yeah.
They need it, but nobody really knows that they're out there.
Completely.
Yeah. So
and
go ahead.
I don't know what I was going to say.
So now you got 4 hours, and is it a thing where you're like, this is, I imagine it's everything that you get to feel when you find out that your wife is pregnant, in that you get excitement, right? Followed by immediate fear, and then followed by a borderline depression because it's real. Like, and it's happening now. Only you guys felt this in a span of 4 hours, and it had been like you've been doing it for almost 9 months, I imagine.
Yeah. We started our process on June 2nd, and then you have to go through all these trainings and stuff to.
Right. Well, I guess so. I'm saying like the babies, like they're here. Here come the babies. Like that's what I mean. It's like all of that. Yeah. So do you start off like, oh, it's happening. Okay, here we go. And then when you start looking at what you're going to need, it starts getting real, right?
I don't think your brain can process it that well. I think you just kind of like go in survival mode almost and then make it happen. Because I remember like the 2 days later, waking up, and one of them was crying and going, oh my goodness, like, these are our kids. Like, we're in charge of them. And not only are, like, the state has said that we need to keep them alive and we need to feed them and we need to do all this stuff. And then I was like, no one's coming to pick them up anytime soon. Like they're ours for a while. Like,
and do they also send like a social worker by to visit the house?
Oh, yeah. It comes with the whole social schedule.
For how long?
Until they're officially adopted. So we get someone every single month from the county would come. And then because we're with a private agency, someone from the agency would come every 2 months. And then you have their lawyer who would come every 6 months to check on them. So you have people in the house constantly. It's like parenting.
Their lawyers, as in the lawyer for the agency or the lawyer for the kids?
For the kids.
Oh, wow.
For the
kids. Wow.
Just to make sure that their well-being is being taken care of, that kind of stuff.
It's good, right? I mean, It's the benefit that you have when you just birth a kid, for better or worse, is that I don't have anybody looking over my shoulder.
Oh, no. I had to get permission to cut my children's hair. Like, really? You're not allowed to cut. I mean, it's like taking your kids. We're glorified, you know.
You're good.
Caregivers. You know, like, it's like taking your child to the daycare. You wouldn't want them to cut their hair. And then you
that's
get
true.
Them. So, but that's essentially what we are. Like, we were allowed to have medical, you know, things, but we weren't allowed to do anything educational rights, like any of that kind of stuff. Like,
how long between where you get the call and they're officially adopted?
3.5 years.
Holy crap.
In our case.
So 3.5 years of getting permission to get haircuts and anything else. And having
parental visits. We had visits 3 times a week for 3 hours a week in the beginning. And then it slowly tempered off into once a week for 2 hours by the time it was almost said and done. Like,
parental visits. So the biological parents would come and visit.
So the whole idea of foster care is that these parents hit rock bottom. They realize that they're going to lose their kids and they get their act together so that they can continue to love their biological kids. Majority of the time it doesn't happen, and should it happen, because it's not safe for the kids, you know?
Yeah.
But you want to keep that bond because it's about relationships, right? So you want to keep that bond going. And then it's a chance for the state to see if mom can do, which is totally BS, because you have someone monitoring you for 2 hours.
Right.
Like, 2 hour monitoring visit is not real parenting. Like, can we go on a red eye flight and see how you handle it? You know?
I like that as your parenting simulator, a red eye flight. You get condensed in a cylinder through 30,000 feet in the air.
Getting judged by everyone.
Yeah, let's see what you're made of then, hotshot.
Exactly. Fever in the middle of the night. Right. How are you going to handle that?
What are you going to do?
Vomit all over the floor. What you going to do there, buddy?
That's great. That's fun. 3.5 years. Wow. And so you go through that, and then is there a certain point in that 3.5 years where you feel like these girls are going to be with us? Because it's two girls, right? The twins?
Right. The twins are girls.
So,
that's an interesting question, or a hard question, because there's points where you do. Like, every case is different. Like, for our son's case, there was actually a cousin who wanted custody of him. So for the first 6 months, we're like, are we going to keep him? Are we not? How is this going to work? Which, by the way, adds a lot of PTSD to your life.
Oh, I bet.
Like, tons of trauma, not realizing.
Well, how can you really I mean, let's see, honestly, I know that we're realistically, it's all about the kids, right? But I think it's unfair to expect that it has zero emotional toll on the adults who are volunteering, because you want to connect with these kids. But at a certain point, you can't get too connected just for your own protection, right?
But if you're doing it right, you do, because you know that's the best for your child.
Right.
So then you just,
imagine developing a bond And then just like what happened to our friends, you just, that's ripped away.
And we had a foster son that left, and that was probably the hardest thing to do, and is having him be in our lives for 6 months and be in the girls' lives for 6 months. And then he needed to move with his biological brothers, which was a good thing for him in the end. Maybe, I don't know. I'm still judged out on that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's super hard because that's your son. Like, and then you hand them over to the social worker and going, okay, wow, you're making me do this. Like, how, okay. Like that, it's hard. It's not for the faint of heart, but at the same time, like, I know I gave my son Mario the best start of his life.
Yeah.
Like, he got unconditional love. He got siblings that loved him. Like, he had the best start, and he is a truly joyful child because of it. And I still talk to the mom and stuff. So it's like, oh,
that's,
I know he's
doing
well.
That's good.
But yeah, but you have to, if you're doing it right, it's basically a sign for your heart to be ripped out.
Yeah.
And people foster. It's not a good thing. I'm like, hey, you need a foster, and it's the hardest thing in the world.
But here's the thing. I think you would agree in that if this has to be a calling, like this has to be a big part of your heart. You know what I mean? This is not, I feel the same way about this that I feel about teaching, that when I was going to school to be an elementary school teacher, there was a bunch of adults. These are grown adults who were struggling with basic arithmetic. And the math teacher said, if at this point you're struggling with this course, you might want to rethink your career path. And there were gasps from people in the room, like, how dare you, sir, tell me what I can and can't do? I want to be a teacher. And he's like, yeah, but should you be? If you can't grasp arithmetic? And I feel like someone like me, who, sure, I've read a ton of parenting books, I've interviewed experts, right? So I could be arguably prepared to do this, but if I'm not committed to it, or I can't handle the emotional volatility of that, then it's not for me, right?
Can I call you out a little bit, Justin?
Please do.
Yes, like there's some people who shouldn't be parents, biological,
absolutely,
adoptive, whatever.
Myself included.
But at the same time, I think we need to stop thinking of ourselves. Like, I hate it when people, I want to punch them in the throat of like, oh, I could never do that. I have such a heart. I'm like,
such a heart.
A heart. Like,
it's
too hard.
Too
it's
hard
too
for
emotional.
Me.
I'm like, really? Is it easy for that kid to live homeless? Is it easy for that kid to be emotionally, physically abused?
Like, but it is easy for the same reason that we know more about the dogs needing to get spayed than we know about orphans. You know what I mean? I think it's a natural, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying I think that's probably what people are more connected to. There are more people who I think are wired like that than there are people that are wired like you, is what I, and I think you would agree with that, right?
Yes, but I feel like people should probably look more into themselves to really feel like.
Because in your mind, and I think it's probably why it made you someone who, even when you were younger and getting engaged and stuff like that, knew you wanted to adopt, is that in your mind, why have, but I'll finish the thought. Why have a kid? Why make a kid when there are kids who need homes already? Like, why do that at all? Why go to a breeder as opposed, this is such a horrible analogy. I hate that I keep going back to the pet thing because it makes me, I feel like it makes me sound accidentally bigoted. But it's, to me, I think that it's, I'm trying to point out by holding up a mirror to look at the level of priority that people will get up on a soapbox about rescuing a dog from a shelter, right? But again, can't say, I just don't have, nobody will ever say, I don't have the heart to get a dog from a shelter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we're talking about the difference of a pet and a human.
Yeah.
Right?
I just don't feel like people process through it enough. Like, I don't think.
They don't give it enough of a fair shake.
It's fair shake. They're easily discredited, like, oh, I could never do that. But it's like, but maybe you could. Like, the fact that your heart is actually breaking for these kids could be you thinking that maybe you shouldn't. It's a scary, scary step.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Because I feel like there's people just don't give it a second thought. It's like, oh, no. Versus like, oh, I don't know. Like, it would be hard and it does change your world. And I'm not going to lie. There are moments when I'm like, especially with our son, that I'm like, oh, crap. Did we mess up our family? Like, oh, no. You know, like he takes a lot. So,
you know,
I think people need to think about it more. And whether they land yes or no is up to, like, they need to land yes or no. But they at least need to think it through versus just discrediting it.
Immediately not thinking of it as an option, like just moving past it without even considering.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's, you know, normally I'm going to change things up because this is really interesting to talk to you about this stuff. So I want to take a quick break and then I want to, normally we would do some kind of like a segment or something here. But what I would like to do is, because I feel like I haven't even delved deep enough into the story of your whole family, and I find it profoundly interesting. So
well, I hope everyone else does too.
Huh?
I hope everyone else does too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, trust me. All right, so we'll be right back after these messages. we were just chatting during the break with your husband, and that he was mentioning a canvas, and I think it's a better representation than my dog shelter one of the emotional roller coaster of parenting. Can you describe that for me? What's it say?
It says basically, I'm willing to be hurt so that these kids can be loved.
And the idea is that I like the way he said, is that we as so what my kids, I can hold on to my kids. Like I can love them and I can grab them. And you guys do that too. When you guys have these kids enter your life, whether it's they've become adopted, obviously it's a little bit more secure or even could be argued completely. Right.
Yeah.
But when you're there in the foster care and you're in that 3.5 year, man, I can't get over that. But that you have to love them, but also be willing to let them go, which is kind of what we were talking about when we ended the last segment.
Yeah, you love them with all your heart, but you have them with open hands. Because you don't know. You don't know if someone else is another family member is going to come up, or if they're going to go with biological brothers in the case of our other foster son, or mom's going to actually get her act together. And actually, you know, there are happy stories in foster care.
Right.
Where, you know, dad, I was just reading a post from one of my friends, where dad, biological dad, got mom, got little baby girl back after multiple visits back to this foster home. But now she's just mom, like she's mom with single dad, like she has her family and they spend birthdays together, and it's like family basically in a weird way adopted the entire family of dad and bio child.
It took everybody in.
Well, no, that would have been a cooler too.
Yeah.
But basically like is helping him parent aside along him.
I did an interview over last summer with a guy, and his name escapes me, but what he's doing something I think that is similar to that, but it's more organizational, where he's working with the court system in North Carolina, and his big thing is about child support. So when dads are right on the edge of going to jail for not paying child support, he gives them an option. And so they can either go to jail or they can go through this 6-month program called Forever Fathers. And where he kind of gives them a course, for lack of a better way of putting it, on like how to be a good man, how to be a good father, what's the right thing to do. And they have 76% of the dads that go through that program end up actually paying more in child support after going through the program.
These dads just probably need someone to walk with
them.
They need a model. They didn't have their father be that model.
Correct.
And so they need to break the cycle and have someone walk with them.
Absolutely. And this guy's kind of point is that he said most of the guys say that. They say, well, my dad didn't do this, so why? And he goes, yeah, but because your dad didn't, instead of being the thing you do, you should see why it's so important that you don't do that. Like you need to, that's the big thing is skewing that perspective a little bit. So I want to go back. So you have the daughters. How old are the daughters now?
Seven.
So, how long before your son comes into the picture when you have the little girls?
We adopted the girls in June, and then 2 months later, we got a call for baby brother, and we took him home from the hospital. Now, that's crazy, is taking a child that's not like yours from the hospital.
Because
like,
he's just born.
He's 3 weeks old, and I'm sitting here literally in the rearview mirror going, are the cops going to stop me? Like, does everyone know that I just took a baby from the hospital? Like,
yeah.
The admin should get fired for this. Like,
and does he also happen to be a black kid as well?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
He's biologically related to the girls.
Okay.
All same mom. Different dad, same mom.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible not only in the idea that they all are siblings and get to stay together. I mean, if they're half siblings, but just that kind of the coincidence of it. I mean, was that by design?
It's by design. They really want siblings to stay together.
And they knew that you wanted at least a third kid, right?
Yeah, maybe. That's debatable again.
So, well, because I remember when we started talking, you said the plan was for you at least to have two of your own, and then one that was adopted,
just
right?
Justin, the plans changed numerous times.
I have a friend, and it was so funny when they got married that they were like, the wife wanted four kids, and I said, I have one. I hope everything works out, but just have one, and then after that, talk to me about having four, kind of a thing, because you don't know. You don't really know. So, but once you had the twins, you felt like, okay, we're kind of tapped out with the twins. Well, and you'd only had them, maybe...
We had the twins. Well, they were with us the whole entire time, right? So we had the twins. We got a foster son. That foster son, anyways, I don't know how I'm alive sometimes, because we got our foster son in October, I believe. I forget.
So June, you got the babies. What? Well, and then October.
So we got the girls in September. We had them for a couple of years. We had them for a couple of years. And then we got a foster son, and he was with us for 6 months. And then he left in March. And then we adopted the girls in June, and then we got brother in August.
I see. So, like, so the adoption was closed, and then the other boy came along.
The adoption, then our son came along. So
yes.
The adoption wasn't closed. Like, we had an open, like, we were still fostering, but it was far enough along that we knew that we were going to be adopting them. And so we got a foster son. It was just weird because in literally, I think, like, a year and a half, we had a son, lost a son, officially got two kids, and then officially adopted the girls, and then got another baby brother. And it was like, what? Like, that's not normal. Like, that doesn't happen in a biological family. Like, you have to be pregnant and you have to, all this stuff happens. You can't, like, the most you can have is like 18, like 9 months apart,
right.
You know, like scientifically. But we had everything like going through like a revolving door.
And did you know when you got your son that he was special needs in any way, shape or form? Or was he so young it was impossible to know? Or can you answer that?
I probably knew, but didn't want to know, like the denial of it all. And in hindsight, everyone at that off in NICU were like, you're such an amazing person. Because not all kids are cute. He was ugly.
Yeah.
Like, he was ugly. He was four pounds. He barely had any, like, he only had skin over his, like, skeleton, like his bones.
Was he
had
premature,
no muscle. He was 3 weeks early. 3 weeks early.
But
they took him out because he was failure to thrive in utero. So that's some other term for it, but he wasn't growing in tummy mommy's belly. So they took him out because he wasn't growing. And so then they kept him for 3 weeks and then we got him. So and his head was super small. Like, there's just lots of signs, but it was kind of like, oh, we're getting brother. And yeah, so it was like, I think it was more denial, a little bit of realizing what it was. And then, I mean, I probably wasn't on, like, we got a diagnosis of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder pretty early on. Like, mom admitted to drinking. There were signs of it all. Like, his brain size is so much smaller than an average child or infant would have been and still is. Like, his brain's small.
Mm-hmm.
So there were signs. So he definitely was special needs. And he started to do occupational therapy at 6 months old, and then he started doing PT at a year, and then he started doing speech at 18 months. And I mean, he knew very early on that he is special needs kind of thing.
And so you add on to that.
Those are dark years.
Say what?
I call those our dark years. Because Jackson was waking up every single hour to feed because he was so small for the first 2 months.
Yeah.
And then it went to every 2 hours. And I mean, you've had two newborns. Mm-hmm. Like, those first 6 weeks, like, your body has to. Yeah. Yeah. And so I did that.
And that's just with a kid, right? You have an added layer, I think, on top of it. I would assume, am I wrong? But that with him being developmentally regressed, that it requires even more attention.
Completely.
Okay. There was a chime.
Well, then you add to the fact that the girls just turned 3.
Yeah.
They had lost their brother that they thought they were going to keep with their Mario. So they're going through some trauma of their own, plus their own trauma of their history. Like, the brain is, the girls' first 9 months before they came to us was so, and even a little bit afterwards because of seeing bio mom and all sorts of stuff, just the process itself. They have so much trauma in their life. All of that was coming out. So they were throwing 4-hour tantrums, like, we were having night terrors in the middle of the night, and I'm having this child every hour, and then every 2 hour, like, I mean, I had to get off of Instacart because all I was doing was ordering ice cream, chips, and, like, beards to, like, the couch. And I was like, dude, this is not good. Like, I got to cut this service out.
Well, you're just looking for anything to feel good, right?
Completely.
Like, right. Like, just something that is nice because there's just...
And he works nights, you know. So he was teaching classes and I'd be by myself with these 3 kids like every hour and like tantrums and all that stuff. I was like, I just need ice cream. Just bring me ice cream.
That's understandable. So, it's entirely understandable.
It's a comfort. But
so you said that those were the dark years. Do you feel like you're getting closer to the light? I mean, I don't say that it would compare, but I remember when my second son was in that first, 6 month to a year span, I would kind of equate those to being my dark years because my wife and I became two people who were taking care of kids instead of two people who were married to each other, right?
Oh, completely.
You guys are jumping into an even deeper water with current flowing in an in weird random directions constantly, just trying to tread water seems impossible to me.
Oh, yeah.
With the swells that I imagine come over your head from time to time. And that, so, but when Jack hit about two is when I felt like, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That feels a little bit lighter. Do you feel like you're feeling that now? Or is it just that you're getting more used to it?
A little bit of both. Like that, okay. Those dark years, I mean, there's a reason why the statistic rate for special needs kids is like super high. Because Chris and I were like butting heads all the time. I mean, we both kind of felt guilty.
By statistic rate, you mean that like divorce?
Divorce,
yeah. Okay.
Like our marriage was rocky, like at those points, because we had so much to do and give to these three kids that we had nothing for each other, like nothing.
Nothing left.
I use the analogy of like most people when they have kids, they have like a pot, like they put their marriage is like a soup on a pot. Like, mm-hmm. I can't talk.
That's okay.
Soup on a stove. And, you know, you go on date night and you stir it a little bit, you know. Well, ours was like not even on the stove. It was like molding somewhere in the pantry because there was not like there was nothing to give to it.
And do you have family nearby that can help out with the kids where you could even
we have
take
friends
that are
family.
Uh-huh.
But with the foster care system, too, you have to.
You can't do that.
You can, but you have to watch how many hours.
No, I remember this from my friend because they have to be like CPR certified. Like there has to be all of these things. Just for somebody to be able to watch your kid for a few hours, if that.
Yeah. And the rules gotten lightened up a little bit. Like there's parent discretion. Like if I feel like they're a good fit, then you can. But it has to be for a certain amount of time and not regularly and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. But to answer your question, yes. I feel like we've gotten to a spot where Chris and I are better parents. We know, like we do the, you know, Tina Bryce and Dan Siegel whole connected parenting type parenting where it works for them. So we're not adding trauma to the trauma anymore. So we're actually healing. Jax is just Jax, and we'll still always be figuring that out. But it's less. So, and the girls have gotten more healing. They enjoy school now. They like. So we're getting to a spot where it is a little bit like, okay, we can breathe a lot
more. Feels manageable, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the girls. Like, the girls have come so far from their tantrums and night terrors and all that stuff to, like, I mean, they used to, we didn't, like, in kindergarten, we didn't even really learn anything. We just tried to keep them in the class.
Right.
Because all they would do is run. And they're twins. So they would like literally there's a story of them trying to hop the fence and helping each other hop the fence and getting stuck on the fence. And like,
Wow. They're
like our school's amazing. So they were helping them down and all sorts of stuff. But
can you talk about that for a little bit? Because I know that we have listeners that have kids with special needs. And I know that more than likely, I tell me if I'm wrong, I imagine that when you're dealing with that in it, like I feel like part of the reason why you have the perspective that you have is because you either saw it when you were doing it or said we need to do something or something needs to be done, or you've learned it after coming out of it. You know what I mean? Like what you call the dark years. So like what do you have? I know I hate to say it, like to simplify it, but it's like what words of wisdom or tidbits or anything can you tell someone who has a special needs kid? How can I take care of this kid, right, and make sure I'm doing right by them, but at the same time, maintain my relationship?
Oh, for like your marriage?
Yeah.
Guard your marriage like no other. Chris and I go to breakfast every single Monday, and we don't try, like we don't change it. Like we don't spend money on it.
That's your quote-unquote date night.
Yes.
That's just you and Chris go to breakfast.
I don't know why we do date nights, because by nights I'm exhausted and
that's
I can't even have a
point.
Conversation.
That's a very
so
good
like,
point.
You take the kids to school, and now you can talk to me because I can talk.
Right.
I'm awake.
Yeah.
You know, but after doing whole bedtime routine, like, I'm useless. But I would definitely, and even if it's just like a little, like we don't always go to breakfast because that would be expensive. Like, we literally sometimes sit at the coffee table and play Bananagrams, or we play a game. Or we tell each other our goals with each other of like what we're gonna do accomplish that day. So it's kind of like not to like be like, did you get the laundry done?
Right.
But more be like, hey, how can I support you in this? Because if I tell him I'm doing laundry today, then he'll be like, hey, I noticed this, I switched it out for you. And
yes.
I'm like, oh, thank you. That
right.
was nice. So I guess my biggest advice for marriages is just to like guard it and to make time for it because you have to. I mean, 90% of marriages with special needs kids fail. Is that the statistic?
Wow.
The statistics all over the place, but that's where it comes kind of land. Some of it's like nine. That's the highest one. And I think the lowest is 75 or something. Mm-hmm.
But still, that's not good. It's not a minority by far.
No. So you have to guard it. You have to guard it. Because if you don't, you're going to be one of the statistics.
Well, it's the thing where it's funny because, and I think so many, I talk about this a lot, is that in the parenting books that I've read, they always have some kind of an introduction or a beginning paragraph that seems to say, make sure you focus on each other, right? Make sure you pay attention to each other because that will actually help your kid feel more secure, more confident, blah, 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 right? But then they go into all of the information, which is the stuff that after that. And it's so easy to forget, I feel. I think it's so easy to lose track of that. In fact, one of the things I've been spitballing around in my head is that if I did a solo episode, is that I was going to talk about and throw this kind of, I don't like to give advice per se, but it's the idea of saying a reminder of, you know, make sure you're checking in with your spouse. Make sure, you know what I mean? Because you can get lost in your job. Oh, you can, and if you're the caregiving parent, you can get lost in the kids. And then what happens is when you become too hyper-focused on either one of those things, I think that animosity seems to be a great place for animosity to grow like mm-hmm. mushrooms on a piece of dog poop. Like it's just, it's all bad, right? And then once you start having, if you're the person who's mostly home taking care of the house and the kids, then it's like you have animosity for them because they get to go somewhere and they get to, especially if you have little kids, right? That it's like, you get to go have adult conversations, USOB, right? You know what I mean? Like somebody actually asks you how you feel instead of you always taking care of somebody else. And then you add on top of that, it's that, because I think it's more of a common thing for guys to associate with. It's still, even though we have more and more stay-at-home dads that are propping up, but I think it's a more stereotypical example for a guy to come home from work and to want some attention from his wife, and she's tapped out.
Oh, completely.
She's tapped out on giving anything. And so maybe you can answer this question, being a mom and somebody who's been through this, is that, say I'm a guy who wants some attention. I think the best way for me to get that attention is for me to first give it, right? Is for me to first make sure that she's taken care of.
I think you both have to acknowledge the other person's day. Because sometimes Chris comes home and he's had a crappy day and then I'm expecting him to be like an amazing parent. It's like, well, that's not cool either. So it's like acknowledging where both of you are and then coming together from there. Does that make sense?
It does.
That's it.
I was always impressed by Natalie's ability to come home from a day at work and jump right in with the kids. But it's because, and now I get it. Now that I work an 8-hour shift, even though it's only 3 days.
You miss them.
Yeah. Yeah, you when you get away from it, and it's so funny about how the human brain is wired, is that you're always thinking the grass is greener. I think no matter how your life is, you know what I mean? You're always, and this is kind of my new thing that I want to make a bigger part of who I am, is that this idea of finding comfort in whatever it is that is now, right? Like even though things are rough and there are dark times, like I literally had a conversation with my wife this morning where I said, you know, it wasn't really a disagreement and it's not worth going into right now. But the point is that I go, you know, we got it really good, but it's hard to notice that, right? It's hard to hold on to that feeling of how good you have it. Like the love that you have for Chris and the love that you have for these kids and the good that you're doing for not just their lives, but the good that they do for both of your lives. It is really, really hard, I imagine, to hang on to that 24 hours a day. You know what
you're
I mean?
You're human. You're going to think about the negative. And then in the tantrum, you're like, really? Like, really? This is my life? Kind of thing. And I think you have to stop and like, not only just be in the present, but also just not think about the future too much at all. Because like, if I think about the future, my son's going to get shot and that's the end of that. You know, like.
Because you'll go down a spiral.
Go down a spiral. Yeah. That's what's going to be. Or we're going to be with him for the rest of, like, he's going to be with me for the rest of his life. And I'm never going to have my times again. And retirement's never in the future and all this stuff. Or where he's going to be. Like, what's his brain capacity going to be like? Is he going to be able to hold a job? Is he not going to be able to hold a job? Like, what? It's scary. You can go all the way down that. So you have to also stop thinking about that and just being like, this is what I got and it's amazing. And not compare it to like everyone else. I had to get off Facebook because it's like your kid's walking. My kid's more the talking. Like your kid's saying this and this. I'm like, my kid's not.
Yeah.
My kid's not. You know, like my kid's so far behind everyone else's. Like you always compare everyone's perfect life on Facebook. And it's like, that's not what their perfect life is. So you have to stop. Jackson's the amazing Jackson for where Jackson is right now.
Right.
Kind of thing.
But it's such a, and here's the thing, I think regardless of if you adopt your kids or if your kid has special needs, I think that it doesn't matter. That doesn't affect that mindset in a parent. I think that, I think with we all feel that way. We all feel like, oh, I'm not doing enough. Oh. Like I had it on the other side of the coin where recently my kids are in flag football and I had to text the coach and say, I can't be at the practice at 6 because I got a booster club thing that I have to do. And he was like, hey, stop trying to be father of the year and just do football. And he was teasing me. But because I wrestle with this anxiety, I think, so much, and I talk to people so much about it, there was a part of me that wanted to immediately confess to him and go, no, I'm a horrible dad. Like I'm far from it. But then here's the other part of it is that because a big part of why I do this show now, it started just as a thing that that paralleled my comedy, but it's kind of grown into something that I think is much better, and sounds maudlin to say, but helpful, is that how can I not also kind of take pride in that? Because I think it's okay. I think it's okay for me to be proud of the fact that, yeah, I like being the offensive coordinator for my kids' flag football team, and I like building a fort, and I like being the president of the booster club. But I think it's more important that anybody who is out there listening and hearing me have pride in that, that it does not shame them because they are not able to do that. Or don't even have the interest. That doesn't...
Yeah.
It's not, I think really all it boils down to, and I think that, and tell me if you agree, don't let me put words in your mouth, but I think what it really all boils down to is kind of what we started talking about, is that the love that you have for your kids and the love that you have for your partner, whoever that may be, whichever side of the coin you are on, right?
Is that
whether you're the caregiver, you're the breadwinner, or whatever you want to call yourself, is that it really comes down to the connection that you have with those people, and then the friends and the family beyond that is what ultimately it all comes down to, which sounds super hippie and super blowhardy.
But I would add even more hippiness to it. And then you have to like make time for yourself as well. Like you have to have, like you have to love you too.
Yeah.
Which sounds, love yourself.
Right? No, but it's true.
but it's really, yeah, it is.
I talked to so many, there's a guy who I just interviewed for Dr. Kenneth Perry from the Sleep Center that Dr. J set us up with. And he was talking about how the most important thing for parents with younger kids is that they need to make sure that they're getting rest as well as far as sleep, right? He's a big sleep specialist. And he said that you're able to take care of other people better if you have sleep. Like it's a given. So,
and you have to do that with your, like, yeah. So it's like you have to take time for like self-care.
Yep.
For yourself, and then self-husband or husband care. Self-husband. Anyways, husband care.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if we could just take care of ourselves as husbands? Wouldn't it be great?
That'd be nice.
Wouldn't it be so
nice? Take care of yourself, please.
Wouldn't it be great if marriage wasn't about that connection? Raising kids would be a little bit easier if you didn't have to consider the other person's feelings and thoughts in the matter. You know, maybe we should change the way we do that. Let's take another quick break, and we'll come back and do some moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with the Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
All right, would you like to go first, Miss Patty, or you want me to go?
It doesn't matter.
You go first. Ladies
okay.
first.
So, I know you asked all your guess this, and so I was trying to think of like a heartfelt, make the people cry, but it's not.
That's okay.
Mainly my son does not go to sleep well at all, and he wakes up in the middle of the night numerous times. It's great, but he does this thing that he's done recently because he's been sick this last week with me.
And how old is he? Remind me again.
He's 3 and a half.
3 and a half now. Okay.
Where like during the week he just wanted to be picked up, and so you pick him up, and he just like. Does this? I'm
like no a headlock.
I was like, no one can see me right now.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm here to help.
Like he just like grabs you with your neck and then holds you really tight.
So he puts his arm and forearm goes around the back of your neck and he squeezes.
And he squeezes and then he just sits there. And he's done it.
That melts my heart just sitting here. I haven't even seen this kid.
Oh, he captures everyone's heart.
Really?
He's adorable.
Good for him.
But he's done it like numerous times. Like in the middle of the day, he'd be picked up and he wants to do it. Or you'll sit on the couch and he'll just like grab you. And then you have that awkward, like, because he's so much smaller than you. And so you're awkwardly, but you're like, I'm not going to move. I'm just going to stay here and go to the chiropractor tomorrow because this is worth it. And in the middle of the night, he's been doing it the same way where he just wants to like get close to you and like this squeeze you tight. He's an aggressive hugger.
That's great. That's adorable. So, and again, forgive my ignorance, but I imagine that when this kid is adopted, but I guess you can't really tell for you because this is the only way you've known it. But I can't help but feel sitting on this side of it that it feels even more intense to know that even though this kid is yours, but is not biologically. Does that make sense? Am I accidentally being patronizing here?
No.
Okay.
No, well, I don't, like I said, I don't have biological kids.
Right.
But at the same time, like I feel like adoptive parents have this appreciation for their kids a little bit.
It's a
bit
different
more.
Perspective that you
like,
used to have. Yeah.
Because we don't belong. They're black, I'm white. Like,
right.
This is not
that's what I mean.
Been created.
There's more than just the biological level. Like, you have a visual reminder.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so when he does these little things like that, or the girls will call, like, say something about me being mom or something that's like, it's this thing like, yeah, like, we're a family. Like, we love each other unconditionally like a family, and the world kind of just can't see that yet. There's this deeper level of it a little bit more, maybe. There's also the flip side of that too, I feel like sometimes too.
What's that?
Well, a couple of things. One, like the self-doubt, like, oh, maybe I'm not the mom. I shouldn't be the mom to these kids because, you know, like.
Then it's easier to fall down that spiral because it seems more credible.
Right. And then I feel like since we are not biologically related, I have the space to say some more things sometimes in the sense of like when we got our son and it was really hard, like, man, we may have messed up our family.
Yeah.
But if someone had a biological child, they probably would never have that thought or be able to express it in the sense of, we may have messed up our family.
Listen, as a guy, I think I've done it. I think with my whole Thelma and Louise moment that I talk about when Jack was about, I want to say 3 or 4 months old, I think had more to do with the fact that not necessarily by the kid messing up the family, but I felt like I wasn't good enough to help this family. And that there was a good 5 second moment in my life where I was sitting on those steps in my boxer shorts where I was like, everybody here will be happier if I'm not here. That I felt like a sandbag to everybody. Oh. So I think it doesn't matter. I think that that's kind of the thing that I've learned from sitting here talking to you today is that it's even though you can put it in any kind of different picture, you can have it in any way you want. However you put your family together, it seems like we're all wrestling with the same crap in different dosages, right? At different times. My moment of the week is my son's. I mentioned the flag football. It just started up again. And there's just something about, I don't know why, maybe it's because I kind of like the game. And I'm probably wrong. I always found it interesting how they fell in love with the game. Because when they were young, I watched racing and football. And I guess maybe they never really sat and watched it with me. But for whatever reason, as they got a little bit older, they got into the game. And they both really like it. And it's just fun to be out there and watch guys coach kids, even if flag football. There's something I like, and I know I don't. I think it's just I don't know, but there's something about the idea of there's a 6-year-old kid who just decided to squat, and there's a guy in his early 40s who's like, "Hey, no sitting!" And then the kid just kind of jumps up. Nobody's hurt. Nobody's afraid. Nobody's offended. And it's just that's the natural order of things. And then you have that end of the spectrum. And then on the other end of it, there's a kid who's in like 5th grade or whatever. And the same guy is like, they're doing a drill and he messed it up. And he coached that kid in the year prior. And so he knows this kid. And he's like, Johnson, what are you doing, man? Look at me when I'm get that hair out of your face and look at me. And the kid is actually laughing and smiling at this guy kind of giving him a ribbing. And it was. And so the reason that I bring all this up in Moment of the Week with my kids is that to watch another dude, right, kind of coach up my kid, there was something really satisfying about watching with one son. Both of them got a couple of moments where my coach were like, attaboy, and to watch the beam of pride that they have in their face of like some other guy that they don't even know is like, hey, good job. And then my there was a guy who now I'm coaching against on one of the other little league teams or whatever. But anyway, point is, he kept talking about my older son. Like, I like this kid. Like every time he would come through a drill, and he wasn't talking to me. He was just announcing it to the ether. And it you could tell it stuck with my son. It was really, really cute. So the football thing. And then I also had, which we'll go up, Patty has to see the fort. So I'll go show you what we did after this. But we're building the fort. And there hasn't been a lot that they could do. They helped me pour the concrete in for the posts and like help me keep them level. I tried to work it in as much, but I didn't make them do anything because I did kind of want this to be a fun thing, if that makes sense for them.
Yes.
And it's fun to see when they get interested. And so they actually helped me. It would have been faster for me to screw in the deck boards is what I'm calling that. I run across the floor. But they were like, hey, can I put some of that in? Or I offered. I said, do you want to do it? And they said, sure. So I came up and I'd kind of hold the drill and they'd pull the trigger and each of them, because I feel like they feel more connected to it if they put in even a couple of those screws.
Oh, completely.
And it was funny because this is where I kind of failed as a dad, but it's part of my teasing of them. But when my wife came home, they said, look at, we built the fort. Like we did the thing. And they did like 3%, right? But, and if I was a more mature and better man, I would never be a moment where, oh, we did all that. We did. But to watch my kid go, yeah, like we, and what it realized is that he didn't really understand I was teasing him because I did most of the work. But what he said was like, yeah, we did it. I put in like 4 screws. Like, so he feels.
Hello, Dad.
Yeah.
Those 4 screws are vital.
They're pretty pivotal.
Exactly.
but it was funny because that's how invested he felt in it. So I thought that was very, very touching. So that's our show. You do a blog, right? Occasion. Is it, you said, well, I don't know how. You're already shaking your head. It's weallthinkit.com. Now, is this more associated with parenting or is this just more like life and broad? Like what can I expect when I go check this out?
Not a lot of posts.
It's fine. You're busy.
It's a little bit of everything. The foster world, the adoptive world, the black-white world, the parenting world, the marriage. I go on rants. I just talked. We asked that question about guarding the marriage and what I would say. And
you have a whole blog,
about that. But I also have a blog. I have a rant about why can't kids' clothes like be universal size? Like, that's annoying. Like, my kids' clothes right now have 18 months to 3T. Like, that shouldn't happen in this world. So I have a little thing about that. So it's just a little bit of everything. And I realize I like writing. So I've been trying to write a little bit more here and there. And
it's great. And what's nice about the world we live in now is that I think as this parenting, I don't know if you would agree with this, but I feel like there's a growing parenting culture, right? It seems to just be kind of blossoming and growing because I know that there are a ton of, now they even call them mom blogs, and they're immensely popular. But it's not necessarily just about the popularity, I think, is that, and that's why I'm glad you're doing it, because here's what I've learned from doing this is that I could say, hey, everybody, go to weallthinkit.com and you can give us that little gist. And I guarantee you there are hundreds, if not more, people listening to this right now that are like, I just want, because they go there because they can hear you rant about the universal sizes being all the same. And it's funny to them and humorous, but then they could also read the blog about guarding your marriage, and there's something that they can take from that as well. Maybe not just a laugh, but maybe it's also like, oh, I never thought of that. I'm going to do that now. I'm going to start playing Bananagrams with my husband after the kids go to school because I happen to have a weekday off.
Well, I feel like just our world's different. Like Chris and I, we are adoptive family. We are white and black family. I have special needs kids and twins add to that. And it's like, there's so many opportunities for me to feel alone.
Yeah.
And I don't want that for anybody else. Like, I don't want anyone else to be like, man, I don't know how to deal with FASD. Cause you know what? I don't know how to deal with FASD and having a kid with FASD either. So let's just do it together. Like,
right. Or
let's just come together as a community. So once again, it comes about relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can just make one person not feel nearly as alone out there in this world, then that's good. I probably never know if I do or not, but still. So I guess that's the reason why I
couldn't agree more.
Weird,
yeah.
But
I think that's what has to happen, because if everybody feels alone, but nobody takes the time to even occasionally blog, right? Is that,
right.
And it's not about, it's not about in these kinds of things. I think it's not about always having it every, you know, every week or any of that kind of stuff. I think I don't know why I feel the need to encourage you, but I think it's
please do mentor.
Here's the thing. I did want to say this after the end of it, and I don't want this. I'm always afraid when I give people a compliment because I don't want to sound condescending or patronizing or that you need a validation. But I think that it's just from hearing your passion and your, I think even what I admire most is even your humility in what you guys are doing with your family. I think it's important that you take that time, maybe in between bananagrams or goals of the day, and that you just kind of go, you know, we're killing this. We're nailing it, even for all the mistakes. But I think mistakes are important to also nailing it, right? Like you mm-hmm. have to have those moments of misstepping in order to learn to make the right steps or to even notice them. I do believe that. I think that we put way too much pressure, and I imagine myself in your shoes doing that, and that the pressure would feel even more intense. And so I would just, for whatever my two cents is worth, I would like to say, don't worry. Don't worry. Everybody's going to be fine. Everything's going to be good. Just keep loving each other. Keep getting those headlocks from your son, and everything will work itself out for whatever that's worth to you, Miss Patty.
Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And sharing your story. So that's our show. Check out all the social media handles. I'll put Patty's stuff in here as well. But again, her blog, weallthinkit.com. That link is in the description of this episode. Check that out. And on behalf of Patty Crouch, this is Justin Worsham saying hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.